The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org. Okay, so for the purpose of the recording, I have been talking for a little bit, but I'm just going to say that I'm talking about joy. And I've listed a number of reasons why we might be hesitant to cultivate joy. And I'm just going to continue on this list for the benefit of those of you who have been here the whole time. But one reason why we might feel hesitant or somehow maybe just doesn't feel right, it feels uncomfortable to cultivate joy, is because there's so many sorrows in this world. There's suffering everywhere. And somehow maybe we just don't feel right. Like, well, who am I? Or is it okay? Or something like this. I appreciate very much Jill Shepherd, a wonderful Dharma teacher. She says, it is precisely because there's so much suffering in the world that I've needed to make the effort to turn toward non-suffering, towards gladness, towards joy, in order to restore myself so that I can face life's challenges. Just this way of taking care of ourselves and staying balanced in the midst. So we're not trying to be Pollyanna. We're not trying to like turn away from all the difficulties. We're just kind of like opening it up. Yes, there is suffering and difficulties, but that's not the only thing in the world. There's also beautiful things happening. Babies are getting born. It's so beautiful. People are getting married. People are getting dream jobs. They're getting good news from the doctor's office. These things are happening too. And this poem by Rosemary Traumer, I appreciate very much how she's pointing to how just a little bit of joy can kind of restore us or support us in the midst of all the difficulties. So this poem by Rosemary Traumer is called Strange Balance. Let's see here. So let's make sure that I have this. Here we go. When the boy is sneering or the glass is breaking or the woman is weeping, or the streets are crowded with anger and rage, it is hard to believe a small joy has any real value. Hard to believe a single red Gerber daisy or a cup of grapefruit-scented tea might have any relevance, could bear any weight on the scale that measures what it is to be alive. But last night, while I was steeping in worry, aching with injustice, my daughter created a stage between the threadbare couches and hummed herself a soundtrack as she leapt and spun and shuffled and flapped, and oh, how her brief flare of joy changed the flavor of the night. An improbable balance, the way even the smallest amount of sugar transforms the bitter sauce, the way just one note resolves a minor chord, the way the barest hint of rain makes the whole desert erupt into bloom. I'll read this last stanza. An improbable balance, the way even the smallest amount of sugar transforms the bitter sauce, the way just one note resolves a minor chord, the way the barest hint of rain makes the whole desert erupt into bloom. Sometimes we forget this. sometimes we forget that it's, we don't need like the same amount of bitterness. Just a little bit of sugar can shift it. We don't have to change all the notes in the chord, just one. So it doesn't have to be this equal balance. So sometimes it's easy to be dismissive of like joy or happiness or well-being when it arises, thinking, like, it doesn't matter, it's not going to make a difference. But it can, and it does. This is why it's in a factor of awakening. It does make a difference. And then maybe this last on this list of why we might have this hesitation to cultivate joy or even to think about joy as part of our spiritual practice as a support for awakening is we have this idea that we're not supposed to cling to pleasure, right? Sense pleasures. That's not the way to awakening. If it were, like all of us in the Western world would be awakened by now, right? Kind of after how we're chasing after pleasant experience after pleasant experience. But we might have this idea, okay, so sense pleasures, that's not the way to awakening and to, it's not a source of lasting happiness. But there might be a way which we're kind of conflating joy and sense pleasure. Makes sense. They're kind of in the same neighborhood. But I'd like to unpack it a little bit and talk about how joy is different. But maybe I'll point to there's all kinds of skillful, beautiful inner experiences that are wise to cultivate and experience and really have as part of our lives. Generosity, gratitude, contentment, equanimity, happiness. Joy is in this list too. A bit different than sense pleasures. But they really serve to help sustain us and nourish us on this path, in this life. So maybe I'll just add this, that when you feel like you're stuck in your practice or you've lost momentum and kind of wondering, what am I doing here? You can ask yourself, well, what is your way that you're relating to some of these pleasant experiences that are just arising as part of meditation practice or part of your, whatever your spiritual practice might be. And might there be like a secret ascetic streak that like I can't have anything that's enjoyable or pleasant, no pain, no gain. If it doesn't hurt, it's not going anywhere. You could just check to see if there's a maybe a quiet little belief like that that's operating for you. I'm not saying that meditation will be fun and delightful all the time. Any of you who have meditated before know this is not true. But we can just check to see if you feel if it feels dry and there's no enjoyment, no zing, no happiness, no, I don't know, juiciness to it. Just check, see if what your relationship is to your any pleasant experiences that are arising. Maybe I'll just say, even because, you know, the Buddha got it wrong, even this, before he was awakened, we call him the Bodhisattva, before he was a Buddha, right? His life story is he had this life of incredible sensual pleasures. So that's not going to work, that's not working. Went the other way to kind of like asceticism, no sensual pleasures at all. And it wasn't until the story is that he had some meditative ease, well-being, calm, this kind of inner joy, that he realized, oh, this is the way. This is the way. This beautiful inner joy. This is the way. And this is part of the teaching. So maybe I'll unpack a little bit what I'm talking about when I'm saying this word joy. there's a joy that can arise from engaging with the practice, with meditation practice, this Buddhist practice, in a wholehearted way, without straining, without a lot of ambition or a lot of "I gotta make this work" kind of feeling, not, you know, like clenching our teeth and holding on as tight as we can, but more of this uplifting feeling, this kind of like energetic feeling. So I'm using the word joy to translate the Pali word piti. And there's three words in Pali that are related, and different translators translate them in different ways. I'm going to talk about them in a little bit here. So I'm going to use three different words: gladness, joy, and happiness. This is one way that I kind of like to describe them. Gladness, pamoja, in Pali. Gladness is like when you've been busy for hours doing whatever and you realize, oh yeah, I was supposed to stay hydrated, and you go and drink a glass of water, and that just, if it just feels good, having this glass of water. It's not anything you're going to write home about, but it just feels good. You're doing something good for yourself. You're like, oh, maybe I was a little bit thirsty. I didn't even recognize it. I would say that's gladness, this sense of, oh, that was nice. Joy, I'm saying, is more like champagne. Wahoo, this is fantastic. They're celebrating, and there's this lot of energy and kind of like a lot of uplift. So drinking something that's carbonated and bubbly, and joy has a little bit of that feeling, right? We have champagne at big celebrations. Happiness, I'm saying, is more like hot chocolate. It's more like this coziness, maybe around a campfire with family members, or, you know, something like this, with maybe marshmallows on top, you know, this kind of this happiness, this feeling of. So that's how I'm kind of making the distinction between gladness, joy, and happiness. And it'll become clear in a minute here why I'm making this distinction. So joy, I described it as kind of this energetic, bubbly experience. But it's a wide spectrum. It can be just maybe even a little tingly, like this inner tingly. You know, like when you just, when it's your birthday and you, somebody that you hadn't heard from in a long time sends you a message, oh, happy birthday. And it's just a little like, oh, that was so nice, or something like this. And the spectrum goes all the way to like sticking your finger in an electric socket, zik, you know, real, very powerful physical waves that are a little bit overwhelming, can be overwhelming for some people. It's really, can be a lot. So this really wide range, maybe sometimes it feels like a little bit like hair standing up, or it feels like maybe just uplift. I like this word, kind of like a bubbly uplift. There's absolutely no requirement that it has to be anywhere on the spectrum. Everybody is different. Some people, I don't know why, have it knock your socks off kind, and some kind have a more subtle quiet. They are not different in terms of what's going to support your practice. They are not different in what means you're a better meditator or more spiritual or anything like that. There's no correlation whatsoever between the intensity and how it is, how it's, and your practice is unfolding. So there's a wide spectrum. And I'll also say it can just be a brief moment, or it can last for a long time. Even when you get up, maybe it arises during meditation, and when you get up and leave the meditation, it still is with you in some kind of way. Again, it doesn't have to be any way. It can be really short and really subtle. But one thing that's really powerful about having this joy is that when that joy is there, for the most part, there's not ill will. There is not this kind of a little bit of hostility or aversion or something like that. And I talked about how the cessation of dukkha, the third noble truth, and joy, is it related to that? Well, here's one way it's related. The cessation of dukkha, the cessation of suffering, difficulties, is linked to the ending of greed, hatred, and delusion. And we can say that when joy is there, this hatred is not there. And there's a softening of the greed and a softening of the delusion. This is one way in which it's a support for our practice. So I've mentioned that piti, joy, shows up in the seven factors of awakening. But I want to talk about how it shows up in this teaching that we don't talk about as often. One thing that we can name this is the gladness pentad. I just like that kind of, it's not an alliteration. There's a word for that, when the same sound in the middle of the word, gladness pentad. It goes gladness, joy, tranquility, happiness, concentration. And it's this, what makes this pentad so special is that this is like a cascade event. It's like dominoes. It's like water rolling downhill. Gladness creates the conditions for joy, creates the condition, for tranquility, creates the conditions for happiness, creates the conditions for concentration. So it's when these, like these good or wholesome qualities just lead one to the other. And so the Buddha, he talked about this, and we might have, okay, Diana, maybe this sounds interesting, this gladness pent out, but I don't feel glad at this moment. How do we, if this is true, these dominoes is naturally flowing, but how do we start with gladness? How do we allow this to unfold? So here is an excerpt from a sutta. The Buddha says, an ethical person need not make a wish that may I have no regrets. It's only natural that an ethical person has no regrets. When you have no regrets, you do not need to make a wish, may I feel gladness. It's only natural that gladness arises when you have no regrets. When you feel gladness, you need not make a wish, may I experience joy. It's only natural that joy arises when you feel gladness. When your mind is full of joy, you need not make a wish, may my body become tranquil. It's only natural that your body becomes tranquil when your mind is full of joy. When your body is tranquil, you need not make a wish, may I feel happiness. It's only natural to feel happiness when your body is tranquil. When you feel happiness, you need not make a wish, may my mind be immersed in concentration. It's only natural for the mind to become immersed in concentration when you feel happiness. Kind of this rhythm, just pointing to you how this flows, and this list continues, goes past concentration, goes to liberation. So it starts just with this idea of some not having regrets, not having remorse, living our life in such a way that we have the least amount of regrets, remorse possible. And it doesn't mean that we never can ever do anything, you know, that isn't perfect again, right? We don't have to wait for that. We can reflect on and remember some of the good things that we're doing, have done. We don't have to wait until we've done absolutely everything perfect all the time. Those times when we put the shopping cart back to the place where you put them in the parking lot instead of just leaving it next to your car. The time when you called your friend that you knew was having a tough time. When you told the teller at the store, "Oh, wait, I think you gave me a 10 back, but I only needed a 5. These small things. We can allow ourselves, we can recognize this in ourselves. Yes, I am doing some of these good things in the world without waiting until we're absolutely perfect. And then allow ourselves to feel the gladness of that and feel the appreciation for this recognition that our life is going in a direction. We're in a way that we want it to go. I have to say this every time, without demanding. We may not be there yet, but we're going this direction. And so it turns out there's actually quite a few things that can start this gladness pentad. It's not only the absence of regret or remorse. It's not only like ethical conduct. We might say that there's this movement of the heart that starts gladness, faith, this confidence, and this practice. Sometimes we only have that after we've been practicing for a while, and we have this confidence that, okay, yep, this is tough, but I know that with my mindfulness practice, I can hold it. There's also this expression, kind of like unwavering confidence in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. There comes a time in practice when we feel like this is for me. I'm going to take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. I'm going to make this the orientation of my life. It doesn't have to be for everybody. I'm not here to convert anyone. But there, when you have this clarity about where direction your life is going, there can be some gladness about that. But it also points to this gladness arises when there's this untroubled mind. We could point to this non-regret, but also this idea of, we talk about this as guarding the sense doors, not going down the cookie aisle when we're trying not to eat cookies or lessen our cookie intake. Not spending all the time on the internet just scrolling or doom scrolling if we feel like, you know, it's not good for our mental health. We find ourselves in a bad mood and fearful and angry. To not go outside. To not go outside or move our bodies in some ways that's healthy and supportive. So guarding the sense doors can be a way in which we are taking care of what we know to be helpful and supportive, and trying to, we don't have to eliminate them. We don't have to have this live in some pristine environment. But just this recognition of what is supportive and what isn't, and can we put our energy and our attention there? And lastly, I'll say in this list of things that can allow the gladness to arise is to work with or have some awareness of the 5 hindrances. So for those of you who are familiar with that, I'll just list them, and I'll just say this. I appreciate this very much, that thousands of years ago, they were talking about this. They were talking about sometimes when you're meditating, you just feel like you just want something. Sometimes you want to jump up and run out, right? Or sometimes you feel like, no, I don't want something. And we just feel unsettled because we want something and we don't want something. Or we just feel like we have too much energy and restless and fidgety and can't sit still. Or we feel like we're falling asleep, you know, this kind of thing. Or maybe we can't decide what practice to do. We feel like, I don't know, there's this, should I do mindfulness of breathing? Should I do mindfulness of sounds? Should I do mindfulness of the body? Should I do loving kindness? Whatever. So this hesitation and uncertainty, the five hindrances. So maybe I'll end there with this idea of joy as an awakening factor. It's an integral part of our practice. To not dismiss it, we can really notice it when it arises. And a support for joy is gladness. Something that's a little bit more mundane, maybe it's more just a general sense of well-being. And we can tune into this well-being. And we can allow it to maybe expand or grow. And then it can shift into joy. But often joy arises initially in a meditative context, when there's a certain amount of stability and not a lot going on. So often it's, you know, we've been meditating for a little bit longer. And then once the mind and the body have a sense of like, oh, wow, okay, I didn't even know that kind of joy was possible. Then the body and the mind have access to that outside of the meditative experience. So often it first arises in the meditative setting, but then it can arise in other settings. So joy, it can be subtle, it can be quiet, it can be really powerful. But just an opportunity for us to think about the role it has in our practice, as well as the role our relationship to joy has in our practice. So with that, I wish you all lots of gladness and joy in your life while meditating, while not meditating, on the cushion, off a cushion, everywhere. Thank you. And so, if you'd like, if you'd like to ask some questions, we can maybe pass the mic around if there are some questions. There might not be, that's okay.
Hi, good morning. Good morning. Good evening. Thank you. I have a question regarding how to remind myself. About joy, like if I'm feeling really overwhelmed with something, and I know you had mentioned just like a single drop, or it doesn't have to be super big. Like I received this morning a birthday card that my mentor sent to me, and that was a moment of joy that I had before I was rushing off to work. But is it just being mindful and present? Is that one of the ways?
Yeah. That's one of the ways that we can be with joy, right? Is just notice when they naturally arise, like you just described. And maybe you've heard this, Rick Hansen, he says that, how does he say this? I don't remember his exact words. It's like the uncomfortable experiences are like Velcro, really sticky, and the pleasant experiences are like Teflon. They just slide right off. But we need to spend a little bit of effort when they do arise to like, whoa, wait, let's go back. And if we can, like, wait, how does this feel in the body? How does this feel in the moment? So that's one, to savor it when it does arise. But you started by asking, when can I remember? And you said when something is overwhelming. This, of course, is a great question. We want to be experiencing joy, right, rather than any overwhelming experience. I'll just say briefly, there's a few things. One is there a way to put the brakes on the overwhelm? We might still be having some difficulties, but to get so it's not overwhelming is the first step, I would say. And there's a few ways we can do that. One, that when we're like in overwhelm or when we're like right on the brink, we don't have access to our wisdom. We're not going to remember joy. We're not going to have this stuff, right? We might have this wish that we could. But here's something that can be really helpful is just simply feel your feet on the ground. There's something, it's very simple, and it's kind of literally grounding, and it kind of like interrupts what the mind is doing. The mind is often kind of like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do about this? And this means that, and I better get around to this, and I can't believe this happened. We often, the mind, when we're in overwhelm, is going fast, or it's going really slow and can't land on anything. So to feel the feet on the ground is one way to just stop the overwhelm. And then often there's a number of things, and then I'll just say this one other thing. Just I could give a whole talk on this, right? A whole another 45 minutes. And I have, and other people have too. One thing that can be helpful is to find anything neutral to look at. And what I mean by neutral, I mean boring. Like just to look at the corner of the door where the door meets where the door meets that corner there. And then there's a corner here where two walls. Here's a corner on this chair. There's a corner on this step here. Here's a corner on my little podium thing. And about that fast, and it's helpful to actually move your head. There's like a physiological reason for this. So just this looking at things that are boring, neutral, like corners where two things are meeting will help us get out of overwhelm. Really just kind of like slows everything down and kind of brings a little bit boring. And then you might have access to all your wisdom and memories of joy or something like that. So that was maybe more than you asked, but...
it's great. Thank you so much, Diane.
Yeah. That's some kind of practical things on what we can do when we are feeling overwhelmed.
Thank you. I think I can relate, especially in retreats, right? Once you've been practicing, by the second or third day, at least for me, I allow myself these experiences that certainly go even, I would say, from joy to euphoria. And I worry sometimes because the other side of that is you can become clingy to that, and say, oh boy, that didn't happen again. So, it's obviously wonderful when it happens, but it also, kind of the oscillation of the emotions is itself kind of a part of the reason I meditate, right? Because it helps me stay, the equanimity. So equanimity and joy seem to almost be, kind of opposites in some sense, Anyway, I'm curious because I feel like euphoria is outside. You didn't mention euphoria. Euphoria is sort of outside the spectrum of where you'd want to go. So how do you sort of manage that,
Yeah. Thank you. That's a good question. Yeah, so sometimes there is euphoria is a good thing arises. This can arise, like usually in a kind of a meditative context, often on retreat when you've been in there for a while. And enjoy it. Roll around in it, drink it up, just hang out in it. And I don't know a single person that cannot cling to that. So, and you'll cling to it. This is what will happen. And you will try to recreate it. Like, wait, I was wearing these socks and sitting in this place and, just exactly trying to get it again. Everybody will do this. This is just how it happens. And then, I don't know, then it'll arise again when the conditions are right. Often when we're not grasping. And then we'll cling to it again. And then it's only after it starts to arise a little bit more regularly, then we can let go of the clinging. So there's, but what often sometimes we do is when there's, we kind of beat ourselves up like, oh, I'm clinging for this nice experience and I shouldn't, but give yourself a break. And also, so many of us kind of are hungry for this good feeling. So why not allow it to support us, nourish us? It does support us and nourish us. So I just offer that. Okay, so here we are at the top of the hour. So thank you for your kind attention.